You're listening to WBH Radio. I'm your host, William Holly. Thank you for tuning in to episode 52. I am excited about this one. Joining me remotely is a writer, journalist. As his Twitter bio says, he is the New York Post authority on all things New York Knicks. The one and only Mr. Mark Berman. How are you, sir?
Doing great, William. Thanks very much for having me on your show.
Thank you for taking out the time. Sunday night was a tough loss for the Knicks, losing a close one to the Philadelphia 76ers. But even in that, Julius Randle hits a big three to push it to overtime, and the Knicks were in there till the very end with a chance to win. Mark, the city is excited about this team. Had an all-star for the first time in a while. If the season ended today, the team would be in the playoffs. I see people dusting off the Knicks tape hashtag. Mark, what do you think of what you've seen from the club thus far?
I'm shocked. after their free agency in November, late November, I thought they would be as worse, if maybe even worse than last season's team. But then you realize that coaching does matter. And I think what Thibodeau has shown, he's almost exposed David Fizdale, because this was the same group or most of the same players that Fizdale had last season. And he started off 4-18 and eventually got fired. Mike Miller did a little better, but you know, they still finished 21-45 already with 21 victories, the same amount of victories from all of last season, even though that was a shortened season, 66 games. It's just been remarkable. Las Vegas is stunned. Anyone who bet the over is looking pretty good because it was 22.5. So the Knicks can top that sometime this week.
Now, Mark, I got to shoot Fizdale some bail there. There's a couple pieces he didn't have. Emmanuel Quickley, the rookie from Kentucky. Nerlens Noel, energetic guy off the bench. Derrick Rose has come back to the squad and been a contributor. This is a different team, no?
Well, they don't. Marcus Morris was their top scorer last season, so he's not on the squad. But it really is about Julius Randle going from a major disappointment last season to his first All-Star berth. And yeah, I mean, Derek has only played 9 games, maybe 10 games. But you do make the point, Quickley has electrified the club as a bench player, but he's still a bench player. Yeah. For the first 28 games, their starting five was the same five guys from last season's team. So you have Randle making major strides and Barrett being way more efficient. Listen, RJ Barrett, number 3 pick in the draft last season as a rookie, does not make one of the 2 all-rookie teams, not even in the top 10 of rookies from last season, and it was a lousy class. So he's used that as motivation. But he's gotten the best out of some of these players. And listen, there's been some failures. I mean, Nelikina and Kevin Knox, and they finally traded Dennis Smith, who was not working out. But for the most part, I give Thibodeau the MVP of the team. And I really believe if this continues, he's going to get a lot of votes for Coach of the Year.
For sure. Now, last year when the Knicks hired Tom Thibodeau, I'm going to tell you my initial reaction. I said, oh boy, he's going to run our guys into the ground. You know, if you go back to his days as a coach of the Chicago Bulls, Joakim Noah played for him, and it seemed as if he aged in dog years. Luol Deng needed a spinal tap. That was the beginning of the Derrick Rose ACL injuries and knee troubles. What was your initial reaction when you learned Tom Thibodeau was going to be the coach of the New York Knicks?
Well, William, you still make a good point. We're not sure if he is going to run this team into the ground. There's still time for that to happen, particularly with Randle and Barrett. And Randle looks at like he's at wit's end. I mean, he hasn't he almost needs a game off. He hasn't missed a game, and he leads the league in minutes, and his frustration boiling over yesterday and last week.
Yes.
But yeah, my initial reaction was concern that, yes, they have a very good coach, but maybe the wrong coach for the moment. Mm-hmm. Here was a rebuilding squad looking at player development, and Thibodeau has always been about win now.
Yeah.
But as a friend of his told me recently, and I printed it in my Coach of the Year candidacy story, he's shown that you could still, you know, execute the player development angle and win at the same time. It's not mutually exclusive.
Right.
So he's shown that. And listen, the Knicks got lucky. When they were courting Thibodeau, no other team had a coaching opening yet, except the Bulls, and the Bulls were not going to rehire Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah.
So if the Knicks were battling against, say, the Sixers, New Orleans, Indiana, who knows if Thibodeau would have chosen the Knicks roster.
Right.
I mean, we had a story, you know, that Thibodeau was concerned about Randall, was concerned about Barrett. So the Knicks got very lucky how the Orlando restart played out, that they were able to move on with their coaching search while the Sixers were in the Orlando bubble.
Wow. Wow. A little luck, huh? Wow. Never considered that. Never considered that. Now, Tom Thibodeau, as you mentioned, he gets the most out of his guys. You know, you got to give him credit for that. Jimmy Butler, who's a star in this league, kind of developed over there in Chicago under Tom Thibodeau. We saw the best version of Derrick Rose. And now it seems to be happening again with the all-star Julius Randle. Now, I was reading one of your pieces, and you Randle was quoted, and I'm going to summarize. He said, man, New York was hard. The fans will let you have it. The media will let you have it. And that kind of motivated him to say, yo, I need to perform. So here he is in his seventh year in the league, second year with the Knicks, putting together his first all-star campaign. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen, or the evolution that you've seen from Julius Randle?
Well, if you recall last season, I don't know if you watched the post-game show on the television. Randle was the ultimate whisperer in the locker room. It was tough to even hear him after some of these losses. He spoke so low. And I thought that was just his style,
right.
But he was really upset. He took it so personally that here he came into New York as their big free agent signing, mm-hmm. and he became a failure in the eyes of the fans. And they were a losing team. He was committing a lot of turnovers, wasn't a winning player last season, mm-hmm. and he really took it to heart. And he did all those national interviews and some with us also, explaining how deeply hurt he was and how he wanted to reverse the narrative.
Wow.
And it was a very long off season for the Knicks. You know, they weren't in the Orlando bubble, so it was like 9 months. And he worked his butt off in Dallas with an old trainer. He came into camp in the best shape of his NBA career. And, you know, I had heard the whispers during the off season, but you always hear that stuff. Oh, he's lost weight. Mm-hmm. He looks great. Yeah. But he really came to camp in terrific shape. And it's not a cliche. When you're in great shape, you could give it all on both ends of the court. So he could play at maximum speed on defense and offense. And that's what he's done through 40-plus games. Hasn't missed a game. I write it all the time. I think it's a great stat that no one ever talks about. Durability.
Yes.
Kyrie Irving is going to miss another few games for personal reasons now,
yeah.
I am told. Durant's been out forever. Julius shows up every single night.
Shows up indeed. Mark, 6 assists from the power forward position. 40% from three. Well, I didn't know he had that in his game.
Yeah, listen, he tried to be a playmaker last season at times, but a lot of bad decisions. It was the first time he said he was double teamed, even triple teamed sometimes.
Yeah.
It took him a while to adjust to that type of attention. He didn't get that attention with the Lakers. With the Pelicans, he claimed he was single covered. you know, they had Davis for a while and other pieces, Drew Holiday. So he comes last season and he's the focal point of the defense, of the opponent's defense, and he struggled making the right pass. And when you talk about Thibodeau and giving him credit, he has taught Randle how to make the right decisions, and his assist number is way up. Turnovers, there's still some turnovers, not nearly as much as last season, and that's because he's playing smarter basketball.
What do you think his ceiling is? I was trying to come up with a comparison. I didn't want to go Barkley because I think Barkley's just a monster, the way he used to rebound, the way he used to finish at the rim. I saw a play from Julius Randle the other day against the Sixers, that Sunday night loss, and he was under the basket, and he was kind of pump faking and stuff. I thought if that was Barkley, Barkley would have just rose up and put it home. What do you think his ceiling is? Do you have a player comparison that maybe comes to mind when you think about what he could really be?
Well, he's still not 27 years old, so we're talking about the start of his prime.
Yeah.
And listen, he was really hungry going into this season. Mm-hmm. You hope the hunger level continues.
Yes.
Into this offseason. You also hope that he stays healthy the rest of the season. He seems to be an iron man, mm-hmm. leading the league in minutes, and there's been not even a small injury that we've heard about
right.
so far this season. But a player comp, I mean, he, because of the way he distributes the ball as a point forward, yep. which is what LeBron is, mm-hmm. so he's a very, very poor man's LeBron in that way.
Right.
Because he can hit the three. He brings the ball up court like LeBron does. He's a lefty version, obviously. He's not as athletic as LeBron.
Right.
But again, a very poor man's LeBron James as the point forward, as which he has become this season.
Right. I was just messing around with a few names, and I was like, maybe a Chris Webber, you know. Chris Webber later in his career when he wasn't really as athletic and was more of a jump shooter. That's what I came up with. But, Mark, you mentioned some frustrations maybe mounting with him. Sunday night after a loss, he was a bit upset about some of the calls that weren't made by the refs. And there was some profanity in the post-game presser. And you put together a piece on Monday, March 22nd, saying, maybe he needs to grow up a little bit. You tell me, what'd you write in the post on March 22nd about Julius Randle?
I mean, late last night on deadline, I mean, I found his post-game Zoom conference to be in a little bit of a poor sportsmanship mold.
Yeah.
He didn't have a good night. He did hit that three-pointer to tie the game. Mm-hmm. He may have pushed off. He got a lucky bounce, actually, for that ball to fall in. But he shot 7-22, and to blame the entire loss on that last foul by him, he's better than
yes.
that. And plus, to use the curse word, he's got a four-year-old son. He always talks about being his role model. In fact, in the Players Tribune, he had written about his son was mimicking him on the court, yelling at the referees last season.
Oh, no.
And he was like, is that what I'm teaching my son? So that struck me too last night, because this was the second incident right. in 6 days. He tried to get after Scott Foster. Thankfully, his teammates restrained him mm-hmm. and restrained him repeatedly. You know, he's probably going to get fined for using the curse word, saying the referees. He called it a systemic problem. He didn't use the word systemic, but the comments came across. It wasn't just one play.
Right.
This kind of stuff has been going on. Listen, he was so frustrated. He got called for a technical last night after a Philly player, Bradley, had kind of tackled him.
Yes.
And he responded. It was a flagrant foul on Bradley, but still, Julius probably didn't deserve that technical. However, he did commit the foul.
Yeah.
And everyone says it had nothing to do with the play, but it was a loose ball foul going for a rebound. He kind of pushed Tobias out of the way, and Noel was able to grab the rebound. I don't think Tobias would have got the rebound. He's not a great rebounder, Tobias. But still, it was right in front of the referee, and you'd think at the Garden they'd swallow the whistle there, but it was a bad call. But I thought Julius overreacted.
Another player I wanted to talk to you about, and this guy has been interesting to me for a couple of years, and that's Nerlens Noel. Okay, came out of the University of Kentucky, heavily touted, drafted in the first round by the Sixers. He ends up with the Dallas Mavericks. In 2017, the Mavericks offer him $70 million. He turns it down. He wants to take his chances in free agency, thinks maybe he could get more. It didn't pan out. He ended up settling for $4.1 million from the Mavericks. Mark, to fight your whole life to get to this level, to get to life-changing money, he was so close to it, and then it kind of fell through the cracks. That can cause a player to be disillusioned with the sport, disgruntled. But here for the Knicks, playing on a one-year, $5 million contract, he seems to be engaged. He seems to be energized. So what have you seen from the Nerlens Noel tenure, both on the court and in the locker room? Because I feel for him. My heart breaks. He was that close to 70, and now it's gone.
He's been a terrific defender. But the contract situation, he thought he was going to get a lot of offers this offseason because he actually played very well with the Oklahoma City Thunder as a role player last season. He spent 2 years with Oklahoma. And thought he had rehabilitated his image, as you know, maybe he had some extra baggage, but he was a sound defender for the last 2 years. He thought he was going to get big money this past November, and it didn't happen. A one-year deal, $5 to $6 million. He actually parted ways with his super agent Rich Paul, who represents LeBron and Anthony Davis, you know, probably because he thought he was in line for a bigger deal. And now he's super motivated. He loves Thibodeau. He said it's a match made in heaven because Noel's all about defense. So is Thibodeau. And no doubt the contract is a motivator. He's playing for his next contract. And I think he's going to do well next summer, because if he stays healthy the rest of the year and continues to provide that type of shot blocking and rim protection, you know, he could score a couple of ways. I mean, he's not an offensive player, but he could get the putback and alley-oop. But defense is still a premium to have that type of shot blocker. So I think he's going to do well next summer. He might not be able to re-sign with the Knicks. The Knicks might not be able to have Mitchell and Noel if they decide to redo Mitchell's contract. Right.
How do you move on from the super agent that is Rich Paul, though? He's supposed to be one of the most powerful guys in the sport.
Exactly. And I mean, I know a little some stuff, but I think that Noel had very high expectations going into free agency. And I think he was just a little disappointed that all he could get was a one-year deal for probably $5 million or between $5 and $6 million. So I think that was sort of the root of it. And he's on to another agent, Chris Galston. And again, I mean, it could be a nice payday for him. Again, there is not, first of all, it's not a great free agent class anymore. Yeah. Used to be, but a lot of guys were locked up. And centers like him are not that available. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to do well.
Again, I'm talking to Mark Berman of the New York Post. I was reading one of your articles the other day, and you brought up a good point. You said last year, because of the virus, there was no NCAA tournament. And the NCAA tournament is a great place for NBA GMs to get a last-second look at NBA prospects. And we get to see them play under the brightest light. You get to see athletes from smaller schools play against the bigger schools. But last year, because of the virus, there was no tournament. And the Knicks didn't get an opportunity to see their draft pick, Obi Toppin, play in the NCAA tournament. He's kind of struggled this year, Mark. Do you think the Knicks are having buyer's remorse, or is it too early to tell?
Yeah. Listen, this whole draft, we wrote that this is going to be a tough spot for these GMs, mm-hmm. not having the traditional draft combine, mm-hmm. not having as many private workouts. They did work out Toppin, mm-hmm. but a one on zero workout, I mean, that's all that was allowed. Yeah. What do you see? You don't see a lot. So not having that NCAA tournament, in my opinion, kind of affected Toppin's stock. Yeah. He didn't even have the A-10. Mm-hmm. The Atlantic 10 tournament was actually canceled in the first round. Right. So who knows? Maybe Dayton would have been upended early. You know, they had an amazing season, but Toppin had tremendous buzz. And it just became a groupthink with Toppin that he's a top five pick. He's the best player in college basketball on maybe an NCAA title team. But we never found that out.
Yeah.
And maybe Toppin would have struggled against tougher competition, mm-hmm. you know, in the tourney. So right now, he just turned 23. We're not talking about a 19-year-old.
Right. Oh, yeah.
He doesn't have a three-point shot. He doesn't pass very well. He's very athletic. I thought he'd be able to muscle himself inside and create his own shot. But right now he looks like he has no confidence, and he's not a great defender either. So buyer's remorse, I'm sure when they see Tyrese Haliburton, you know, shoot so well from deep and collect assists and be an old school point guard, I'm sure there is some of it. And I will tell you this, if Toppin was off the board, they weren't taking Haliburton. They were probably taking Vassell, mm-hmm. Devin Vassell, the shooter from Florida State.
Okay.
So Haliburton wasn't even that high on their list after Toppin.
Wow. I hope this is not another Knicks blunder when it comes to the draft. Too much of a history.
I mean, there's been a lot of them. So.
Too much of a history.
It could be.
Too much of a history when it comes to that. The other day, the Knicks played the Clippers. Paul George said about Emmanuel Quickly, said he's crazy and fearless. Okay. Quickly made me a fan earlier when he was that same game. He told Lou Williams, yo, you were my favorite player. There's a clip circulating. He said, you were my favorite player. Now, I love that. There's no problem paying homage to the people who inspired you. And then he went out there, proceeded to play crazy and fearless. Mark, what do you think of the Knicks rookie?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Lou Williams, because that might be the best comparison for Emmanuel. I think the Knicks look at him more as like a sixth man star than their starting point guard of the future. I don't think he's a good enough playmaker right now, especially. And, you know, he doesn't have that court vision that a real great point guard does. But he does so many things to score. He's, as you said, fearless, great three-point shooter, tremendous free throw shooter, and he somehow craftily draws fouls, and that floater has become his trademark shot. I mean, listen, teams are starting to adjust to him a little bit, but for the 25th pick in the draft, spectacular. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it has actually lessened the pressure on Leon Rose for his pick of Toppin, because most fans are like, all right, so Toppin's not working out, but at least we have Quickly. Mm-hmm. Imagine if the Knicks didn't have Quickly.
Yes.
Imagine if the Knicks traded up to 5, traded their late first round pick to move up from 8 to 5 to get Toppin. Mm-hmm. I mean, Leon Rose would be under a lot of fire right now.
Leon Rose, the president of New York Knicks, right?
Still the president. We haven't spoken to him in 8 months, but we believe he still is the president. I see him at the games, so I know he is still there.
There's always been this chatter that the Knicks, and James Dolan specifically, is a meddlesome owner. He doesn't allow his executives to do what they have been hired to do. Is Leon Rose the one calling the shots over there?
Yeah, well, Leon has a lot of advisors, and William Wesley is probably the guy who calls some of the shots, because Leon trusts William Wesley for years and years. They were together in business, in the agency business, and Wesley got Leon players.
What's Wesley's title?
He's the senior VP. He's a senior VP. He's really higher than Scott Perry.
Now, Mark, you got to help me.
So Leon really trusts him.
You got to help me with William Wesley, because I've been listening to hip-hop for all my life. His name pops up in songs. Drake said on Back to Back, I learned the game from William Wesley, right? Jay-Z said on Pound Cake, shout out to Worldwide West. Everywhere we go, we leave a worldwide mess. The other day at the dust-up when the Knicks had with the Nets, I see William Wesley kind of in the background helping to restrain one of the players. It took me back to the Indiana Pacers brawl at Auburn Hills. William Wesley was on the court then, too, trying to get Ron Artest out of there. So, Mark, who is William Wesley? Nobody's been able to tell me. Who is he?
Yeah. So he was never officially an agent for CAA, but he was like a, quote, consultant.
Okay.
And again, he recruited players for Leon, and he was very close with Calipari. So, you know, he got players in high school to go to Kentucky or wherever Calipari was. Started in Memphis, where he got DeJuan Wagner back in the day. Mm-hmm. But Wesley, right, listen, he played a big role in that Randall thing, you know, a week ago. Wesley was the one that really dragged Randall off the court.
Yeah.
The teammates restrained him, and Randall broke loose a little bit. And finally, Wesley just got hold of Randall and just dragged him off the court. So a big assist for William Wesley there. Mm-hmm. He's there to recruit free agents also. He's pals with so many of the players in the NBA. Mm-hmm. We hope that one day he's not charged with tampering. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a story that came out recently that, you know, he's been trying to talk to the Bradley Beal camp about demanding a trade. But, you know, I don't disbelieve it. I mean, that's William Wesley.
Right.
So he's a big asset for them. And Dolan has known Wesley for a long time. And Wesley has been in Dolan's ear on things in the past. Unfortunately, some bad things.
Right.
I'm told that Wesley campaigned actually for Steve Mills to take over for Glenn Grunwald mm-hmm. back, I guess it was 2011 or whenever that, no, 2013. So not everything that Wesley has advised Dolan on has worked
right.
in the past, but Dolan really likes Leon. He thinks he's well connected, as is Wesley.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another name we've been hearing or associate with hip hop is Steve Stout. Steve Stout right. was brought on last year to help the Knicks with branding. And he went on an appearance of First Take, and he said something along the lines of, Toronto Raptors got Drake, the Knicks got me, right? And shortly after that, the Knicks released a statement because Steve Stout made comments about personnel decisions on First Take. And the Knicks said he's not here for personnel. He's here to help with branding. So I want to know, what's his impact been on the organization, if any?
Yeah. He made a blunder going on national TV. It was really about Mike Miller.
Yeah.
And he basically, Mike Miller was still the head coach, and he was actually doing a pretty decent job,
mm-hmm.
but he made it sound like Miller would be fired
mm-hmm.
at the end of the season and made remarks that, you know, our new coach, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I don't think the organization was very thrilled. As you know, they did release the statement. But, yeah, Steve's still in the background. Mm-hmm. You know, Wesley... Having Wesley there sort of made Steve not as important.
Okay.
But, you know, he's still trying to advise Dolan. But right now, I've always said this. It's all about winning.
Yes, sir.
That's how you change the image. And they're winning. Tom Thibodeau is the image changer, not Steve Stout and not Wesley.
Mm-hmm.
It's Tom Thibodeau who has a sense of urgency. As Randall has said, he treats every game like a playoff game. Mm-hmm. And they have changed their image because they are in sixth place. They're almost 500. They play great defense. They've gotten a lot of respect from all the coaches around the league. They know when they play the Knicks, they're in for a defensive dogfight. And that's the image change that Dolan hoped would happen this season.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that's the identity of the Knicks defense? That's what they hang their hat.
No doubt. I mean, you could see it if you just watch, mm-hmm. but the statistics bear it out. Number one in scoring average, number one in opponent's field goal percentage. Last night, in regulation, both teams were in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. I think it was 87 all after four quarters. So, but you see the intensity. You see them flying at shooters, switching, not leaving anyone really open. To cover the team the prior several years, everyone was open from the three-point line against the Knicks. It never made sense. Yeah. It's like they would be double teaming here and then they leave the 3-point shooter open. And it's like, what's the scheme here? Yeah. Everyone's always open. And this season, we don't see that. We see them flying around the court on the defensive end.
There's a lot of people on the team that, you know, we've been hearing about for years that I'm familiar with. And it seems like they have similar skill sets. So all things considered, you know, you got Taj Gibson, you got Elfrid Payton, you got Frank Ntilikina.
Ntilikina, it's pretty close.
Emmanuel Quickly, Reggie Bullock. Like, all things considered, everybody's healthy. Who's the Knicks' best starting five?
Well, it's not about the best five scorers. Thibodeau loves Bullock, mm-hmm. and you've seen it, you know, a couple of games ago when he made the winning steal.
Yes.
So Bullock has started, you know, all season. No one expected it mm-hmm. going into training camp. I think people wondered why they re-signed him and whether he'd be in the rotation. And he's been a starter all year because of his defense. I mean, he got to hit the three, but he's just – he goes against the other team's best wing player every night. And he stayed pretty healthy. But so Bullock, and defensively, Thibodeau still loves Elfrid Payton, still wants to start him. Mm-hmm. Derrick Rose probably will come off the bench when Elfrid is healthy because Elfrid is a better defender than Derrick Rose. So Thibodeau starts his best defenders more than offensive players, as shown by Kevin Knox, who can't even get in the rotation because he's not a good defensive player. He doesn't have a high enough motor on defense for Thibodeau's liking. The guy is almost shooting 38%, I think, from three-point range. He can't get on the court. So it's the best all-around players yes. that Thibodeau puts in his starting five, not necessarily just the best scorers. Right.
So we got Payton, Barrett, Bullock, Randall.
And Mitchell eventually should start when he gets his timing back. He came back from a 15-game absence last night. He looked rusty. His timing was off. Like, he's terrific at the putbacks. He's just got a knack for it. I think he missed three or four, and that's not him. And I don't even know if there was an alley-oop. He made one putback. But I don't even know if he got free for an alley-oop. So he'll need some time to get his rhythm back. And I think Mitchell will start over Noel. But Noel was terrific last night with a double-double.
Mark, I need your help. I want to go back for a little bit. I want to talk about some conspiracy theories. You know, there was always this theory that Creative Artist Agency, a talent agency out of L.A., they represent athletes and actors and actresses. It was believed that they had influence over the New York Knicks. You know, there was articles where anonymous players said, hey, the players in this locker room that are represented by CAA, they have more juice. They get to talk to coaches in a certain way. Mike Woodson was the coach in 2012. They said in order for him to re-sign with the club, he had to fire his agent and then sign with CAA, okay? And conspiracy theorists, the number one thing they pointed to was in 2013 when Chris Smith, brother of J.R. Smith, who was a guard at the time, when Chris Smith got an NBA contract. Everybody said, come on, man, this is not an NBA player. But they saw it as the Knicks doing a favor to CAA clients and kind of supplementing JR's contract through his brother. What did you think of those conspiracy theories? How valid were they back then? Like, did it even matter?
Well, Wesley was Woodson's guy back at CAA as well. So I don't even know if we have to put the word conspiracy anymore. I mean, it's pretty evident that when James Dolan hires Leon Rose with no experience to be the president of the Knicks and decides not to wait for Masai Ujiri of Toronto, that it's clear that CAA had a lot of influence on the Knicks. And then Wesley comes over also to be the top aide. So all those things, Chris Smith was definitely signed as a sweetener to get J.R. Smith. They may have had a, with the salary cap situation, I think maybe they didn't give J.R. Market value. Maybe they had to give a little less, but with Chris signed, it all worked out. And I think Chris was gone soon after. He was not an NBA player. So, listen, the Bargnani trade, I don't know if I mentioned it before with Wesley, that was another maneuver that the Knicks made. Bargnani was a CAA guy, a Leon Rose guy, a Wesley guy. And Wesley, I'm told, had influence on convincing Dolan that Bargnani would work out, and it was a disaster. Right. So again, not everything is working out with CAA and the Knicks. And Carmelo Anthony, listen, he's got
CAA
a tremendous amount of fans in New York, but I feel his stint ultimately was a disappointment.
Yes.
They never got out of the second round. I felt that they should have beaten Indiana. I thought Carmelo was instrumental in not beating Indiana when he went at Hibbert and got blocked, and the Knicks were never heard from again. they haven't made the playoffs since that night. Right. That's their last playoff game. Right. So, Carmelo, a CAA guy. Listen, right now things are going well, but yeah, in preseason and during free agency when they were signing CAA players, yeah, there was rumblings around the league, a little eye roll here and there, but you know, Thibodeau's a CAA coach. It's working out right now.
It's working out. You're right, Mark. And as you mentioned, everything's working out. But this is just for my own edification, like not even talking about the Knicks of this year. Why would a team be beholden to an agency? Why is there such thing as super agents? The teams, there's only 30 of them. And there are a limited number of player slots. You would think a team has the leverage. Why would a club fear pissing off an agent?
Well, that is the drawback of the fact that the Knicks are so CAA oriented right now. And Obi Toppin, by the way, is a CAA client. But they're so CAA oriented, it could backfire when, say, a Rich Paul has a client. He actually represents Lonzo Ball. And, you know, Rich Paul and Leon, you know, they used to be together with LeBron James, but that split, and it wasn't a nice split. So, listen, other agents could resent the Knicks because they're so CAA-oriented, but usually money talks. And we have written, and there's no doubt about it, that Lonzo Ball and family think that the Knicks would be a nice landing spot as a restricted free agent this summer because they know the Knicks have the cap space to really give him a sweet deal coming off his rookie contract. I don't know how much the Knicks would offer, but I know they still feel they need a playmaking point guard because they don't think Emmanuel Quickly, as much as they are delighted at his rookie season, they are not sure that he's their full-time starting point guard of the future.
That was actually my next question. I was going to ask you, what are the positives and negatives to having Leon Rose, former super agent, as the president of basketball operations? Because I remember with the Los Angeles Lakers, their general manager, Rob Pelinka, was a former agent. He represented Kobe. I believe he represented Carlos Boozer. And they said GMs around the league, they didn't want to answer the phone for him because of his history as an agent. They're like, yo, he's untrustworthy. We don't want to deal with it. So it's interesting that you bring up, hey, there could be, you know, a rift there between Rich Paul and his clients. But like you mentioned, money talks.
Right. Well, listen, I will say this about Leon. Yes, he is probably enemies with some agents around the league, mm-hmm. but he's established some great relationships with the NBA GMs.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons. Listen, Phil Jackson as team president, what a horrible fit.
Yeah.
Every GM in the league hated Phil. They were always jealous of Phil, his books, his championships, his arrogance.
Yeah.
He hated agents. As a head coach with the Lakers, he didn't want to, like if an agent wanted to talk to him about something, about one of his players, Phil wanted nothing to do with an agent. Mm-hmm. So as a team president, it was a lousy fit because the agents didn't like him and the other team GMs didn't like him. And that's why still Steve Mills had to do all the dirty work.
Mark, how long have you been covering the New York Knicks?
Amazingly, this is my 21st season of covering the Knicks for the Post. So it's been a long run. And I started right after their berth in the championship round against San Antonio the following season. And it's been a kind of a steady decline, which is why this year has been so exciting. And like, stunning, because like when you cover a team that keeps losing,
yes.
you just expect more of the same.
Right.
And I expected more of the same.
Pre-COVID, can you walk us through the day, the life of a beat reporter covering an NBA franchise?
Yeah, well, everything has changed now for us.
For sure, I'm bet.
I've been to only 3 road games, including Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was in Philadelphia and Washington, train rides, but we're not traveling on the road because everything is on Zoom.
Right.
So we can't go in the locker room anymore. And even before the game, you could stand courtside and mingle mm-hmm. with agents and scouts and what have you. But when I go to the Garden games, they put us on the Chase Bridge. I don't know if you've sat that high.
That's
up.
That's way up.
Yeah, we're right by Walt Frazier's jersey hanging in the rafters.
Right.
So and we're stuck there. We have to show up 4 hours before the game for COVID testing.
Wow.
So it's a difficult experience to cover them this season. Before that, you know, I traveled to all the road games and, you know, the great cities of New Orleans and San Francisco, Chicago. I mean, it was just such a great job. And now you really don't want to travel. I mean, even when I've gone to Washington and to Philadelphia, it's depressing.
Yeah.
I mean, these cities are shut down. I mean, not literally shut down, but it was St. Patrick's Day last week in Philadelphia. You just didn't feel anything was going on. It's sad. And the Marriott hotels we stay at, mostly empty. It's just difficult.
It's got to be hard to get the information you need. Because pre-COVID, you got morning shoot-arounds. Like you said, you could mingle near the court before warm-ups. You got your sources. Man, it's got to be harder to get the information you need now.
It really is a more challenging. And this new regime, I will say that, you know, Dolan is so anti-leaks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's his big thing. Like, he hated Donnie Walsh because he felt he was too nice to us.
Wow.
Donnie Walsh would talk to us almost before every home game. He'd have his seat mm-hmm. 2 hours before the game courtside, and we would huddle around him and chit-chat, and some on the record, some off the record. But, you know, this regime with Leon Rose, although Leon, you know, was a helpful agent, and, you know, he would give out some information off the record as an agent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now he knows he works for Dolan.
Right.
So he's been very, as they say, close to the vest. And even when he talks to other GMs, they never exactly know what Leon is really thinking and what kind of moves he might do at the deadline. Thibodeau gave an interesting remark the other day. first time I've ever heard him say this. He says, you know, this season is still about player development and establishing habits. And that's something he usually just says it's about winning.
Yes.
But this time he's, and we can't skip steps. Mm-hmm. And that was, to me, a strong hint that we're not going to be giving up major future assets to get a win now player as a rental going into the deadline.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what are you expecting Thursday? Trade deadline, March 25th.
I think they're going to make a move. Listen, Oladipo is definitely on the radar.
We need that, Mark.
The Rockets, you know, they're going to want something for him because Harden was traded. Mm-hmm. And in that trade, Oladipo got to Houston. And they want to make that trade continue to look good mm-hmm. to their fans. So they're not just going to give up Oladipo right. for nothing. And they're going to try to acquire, you know, a couple of draft picks, maybe even a first-round pick. And it's, do the Knicks want to give up one of their trove of first-round picks? I mean, they do have a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And they'll have two of Dallas's first-round picks in the next 3 years. They'll have two first-round picks in this draft. One of them will be Dallas's. And then in 2023, they'll also have Dallas's first-round pick. So maybe the 2023 pick could be expendable mm-hmm. for an Oladipo if they really feel he's a difference maker. And I know some people in the organization do think he's a difference maker. They need scoring.
Yes.
They couldn't break 90 points in regulation last night.
Mark, just a couple more, man. I'm going to let you get out here. You've been covering the Knicks for a long time, like you said. 20-plus years on the road, in and out of stadiums, interacting with individuals. If you had to point to a career highlight, you know, maybe it's not something that took place on the court. Maybe you just had a lunch or a dinner, somebody you got to meet. What would you point to as like one of the fondest moments of your career thus far?
I mean, to point to one is tough because the Knicks, unfortunately, I mean, I haven't been to the NBA Finals with the Knicks. Mm. Back in 2000, 2001, the conference finals was the best the Knicks did. But just to be able to travel around the country, to see the beautiful cities, as I mentioned, New Orleans is such a wonderful town, and San Francisco and Chicago and Los Angeles. And we get a chance to, you know, be with the players in these cities. And I mean, it's such a blessing to have this job, to watch basketball for a living, and, you know, to travel the country. We're not doing that now, but I mean, in the past, and that's sort of, you know, the best part of this job is to really get out and see the world. And we went to London with the Knicks on more than one occasion. I believe the Knicks went twice to London. We've been to Milan with the Knicks for Danilo Gallinari, which was one of my career highlights. So, you know, if you love to travel, I mean, it's a great, great job. And if you love basketball, even better, because you're going to see a lot of basketball.
Do you have a favorite Knick of all time?
To cover? I guess when it comes down to it, Carmelo was so much fun to cover because he was so candid. Listen, I know he didn't win enough here, but he was so great with the media. And I think that's why, even though, listen, he'll be a Hall of Famer. And even though he's never made the NBA Finals, he's got such a nice reputation because he was so good to the media after games. He always spoke his mind. You could ask him any question, and he was never going to, he was always going to answer it to the best of his ability, mm-hmm. even almost too candid at times. Mm-hmm. But he would never dismiss a question or make you feel bad about asking a question. So Carmelo he has a great persona, and I think the fans really like him. And it's genuine. And we see him with the cameras off, and he's just a genuinely nice guy. And for someone who's such a superstar, you know, he never changed that. He never changed. He was always a great guy.
Mark, my last question. NBA purgatory. That's being a 6th, 7th seed, going into the playoffs, getting bounced in the first round. Right? You don't win a championship. You're not in a lottery. Like, you don't want to get stuck there. And as I was preparing for this interview, I was reading up on Leon Rose. It came back to my attention that when LeBron James went to Miami, Leon Rose was his agent. You know, and Leon Rose's partner was representing D-Wade and Chris Bosh. Like, Leon Rose was a part of that move. So he got some magic in him. So, Mark, what's next? What's the next big move?
Right. Right. Well, Leon being able to get the LeBron, Dwayne, Chris Bosh thing to Miami was very impressive to James Dolan. Mm-hmm. I think that's when James realized, wow, this Leon Rose could make things happen.
Yeah.
He started listening to him, and eventually Leon got Carmelo to the Knicks. So listen, Leon was hired partly because he's got a lot of connections around the league, former clients like Joel Embiid, and this name, Devin Booker. And we wrote about it during the long pandemic offseason when I was doing a mailbag, and they say, what former Leon client do you think that the Knicks can attract?
Wow.
And we had talked about Karl Anthony Towns, but that was before Thibodeau. Mm-hmm. But Devin Booker was another name that came up. He was frustrated with all the losing in Phoenix. But now the Suns are winning.
Yeah.
So does Devin want to leave Phoenix? We'll see. But I mean, Devin and Leon Rose were very close. Mm-hmm. So it's just a name to keep in mind, you know, down the road when the Knicks try to add another superstar to Julius Randle. Karl Anthony Towns did not get along with Thibodeau, but I think Thibodeau would love to put it in the past. And I always felt that Towns somehow would wind up a Knick one day. The guy is from Jersey. He grew up a Knicks fan with Patrick Ewing posters on his wall. And Minnesota is just such a bleak franchise. And I didn't name Minneapolis as one of the cities that I enjoyed visiting. And that's for the reason.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. But there's going to be a superstar coming. I don't know if it's going to be Bradley Beal. He seems super committed to Washington for some reason. It's not a great NBA basketball town. But, you know, it's a name to keep in mind also.
Mark Berman, thank you, man. That was excellent, man.
I appreciate you having me on. You do a great, great show.
The authority for New York Post on all things Knicks, Mr. Mark Berman. Thank you, man. That's WBH Radio. I'm William Holly. We out.